This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. The hard-boiled writer Mickey Spillane, creator of Tough Guy Detective Mike Hammer, died Monday at the age of 88. Spillane was one of the best-selling writers of his generation. He wrote his first Mike Hammer novel, I, the Jury, in 1947. Other Hammer stories include Vengeance is Mine, The Big Kill, and Kiss Me Deadly. Here's a scene from the movie version of Kiss Me Deadly made in 1955, starring Ralph Meeker as Hammer. A federal agent is chewing out Hammer for getting involved in their investigation.
Where's the key?
What key?
The key you took from Doc Kennedy. I want it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The key's very important. Don't waste my time. Hand it over.
Is it as important as Velda?
If you hadn't sent Velda out to do your dirty work, she wouldn't be in trouble. Now give me the key.
Will you make a deal for her?
Please, the key.
Sure, you'll make a deal for her. Like you did for Christina. You held her under custody in a hospital and you let her get away. You let her get killed. The way Raimondo and Kowalski were killed. And Nick. And maybe Carver, too, for all I know.
Carver?
Yeah, surprised? What kind of an investigation you're running around here anyway?
Mike Hammer came to life in more films and TV series. Spillane himself played the part of Hammer in the 1963 movie The Girl Hunters. In the 1930s, he was known for his pulp magazine pieces. He also wrote for comic books early in his career and was one of the originators of the superheroes Captain Marvel and Captain America. Today we listen back to Terry's 1989 interview with Mickey Spillane. Then book critic Maureen Corrigan will consider his place in the genre of detective writing. Terry's interview with Spillane started with him reading from the first Mike Hammer novel, I, the Jury.
When I looked up, Pat was staring at me strangely. He shook his head. I knew what he was thinking. Mike, Layla, for God's sake, don't go half-cocked about this. I know you too well. You'll start shooting up anyone connected with this and getting a jam you'll never get out of. I'm over it now, Pat. Don't get excited. From now on, I'm after one thing, the killer. You're a cop, Pat. You're tied down by rules and regulations. There's someone over you. I'm alone. I can slap someone in the puss and they can't do a damn thing. No one can kick me out of my job. Maybe there's no way to put up a huge fuss if I get gunned down. But then I still have a private cop's license with the privilege of pack a rod and they're afraid of me. I hate hard, Pat. When I latch onto the one behind this, they're going to wish they hadn't started it. Someday, before long, I'm going to have my rod and my mitt and the killer in front of me. I'm going to watch that killer's face. I'm going to plunk one right in his gut when he's dying on the floor. I may kick his teeth out. You couldn't do that. You have to follow a book because you're a captain of homicide. Maybe the killer will wind up in a chair. You'd be satisfied, but I wouldn't. It's too easy. That killer is going down like Jack did.
Well, I think this sets up the character pretty well. And that whole sense of, and when he's dying on the floor, I may kick his teeth out.
Yeah. How about that?
So, I mean, what does that say about the character? I mean, what did you want to get in there?
Well, the character, something terrible has been done to Mike. His best friend has been shot. Not only shot, but has been shot in a horrible way because the killer wanted to see that guy hurt. Because shot him where it wasn't a death-dealing blow with that shot. He shot him in the gut. He's going to live a while. He's going to be in terrible pain. And that's the way that killer's going to die. So this is the premise of the whole story, that killer's going down just like Jack did, his friend did. And that's what happens.
And Mike Hammer says that in the end, the people have their justice. They get it through guys like me once in a while. You've made Hammer into the guy who's going to get justice outside of the law.
That's right. In this case, he's acting as an arm of the law, but in a different way. He can do things that nobody else can do. He's got more reason for doing it. He's not hung up by rules and regulations the way the cop was. And it's a case of personal vendetta on his part. See, I never had Mike Hammer ever taking a case for money. Everything he ever got into was because of a personal motivation. Something happened to somebody he liked, somebody he loved, some situations were terrible, and he got into it. And with no money behind it, he was on his own all the way because this was a personal nature with him. He needed all of his attention.
Hammer seems to take a lot of, almost pleasure in vengeance and in returning pain that's been received. Is it cathartic for you to write that way?
No, I never used that particular idea. When you're going into a tough situation, pain's going to be there. You don't want to dwell on these things. But there are certain episodes that require this type of thing. If you want to see pain, Violence, sex, you read your newspapers. There's plenty of it there. We have to bring it in where it belongs in the book in order to make the book interesting. You just can't write all about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a certain rhythm. I mean, in some ways, I think you're really at your best when you're writing violent scenes. There's a certain rhythm that you get in those
scenes.
Yeah,
you can get mad when you write. I punch holes in my paper. The yo's make holes. The periods go right into the platen of the machine. I break up typewriters so fast. And when I'm done with a story, that machine has to go in for repair. So you know what I'd do to if I ever work with a word processor, tear it apart.
At the end of I, the Jury.
Yeah.
Yeah. this is like perhaps your most famous scene?
Well, this is the one that's so well remembered. This is the one I told you about. They said it was a sensual scene. Now, see, Mike, he's got a premise in his life. He is going to kill the person who killed his friend in the same way, by shooting him in the gut. Now, at the end of the story there, when he's faced down with this woman that he loves, Charlotte, she knows what he wants to do. She has to get him away from this attitude. She starts to unrobe. She takes her clothes off piece by piece. And the description is of her getting down to the point where she's nude. And then she leans over while she's about to kiss him. She's really reaching for a gun behind his head. Now, if he's true to his premise, he'll stay alive. If he's not true to it, she's going to kill him. And, of course, what he does, he stays true. He shoots her right in the gut. Now, she's a psychiatrist. She couldn't understand that. And she says, "How could you?" And he says, "It was easy." And that's the way he was. That was the end of the story.
And that's your most famous line, I think, that it was easy.
Oh, yeah, it was easy.
Was it considered very unusual to have the private eye kill a woman at the end of a book?
Well, they didn't used to do it in those days. Women were sort of held up on a pedestal. I knocked this one off. I've already killed, I think, two women, made them villains in any of my stories, but they were effective.
Now, why is that something you wanted to topple in your story?
Women can be as deadly as men any time. Again, you know, just refer back to your newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun doing it to them. Of course, there are other times when women are treated with much more consideration than that.
Were there any limits, editorial limits, censorship limits to how much sex and violence you could use in the book and still be mass marketed? Were you always cognizant of what your limits were?
Well, the editors do funny things. And when I wrote One Lonely Night, my camera killed off 200 people with a machine gun, kept reloading and shooting. It was in a commie nest, a real deadly area, and he shot 200 people. And the editor says, "Oh, that's much too much, too much blood." So they knocked it down to 100 people.
That was supposed to be a big change.
That's your editorial concept.
In your novels, women lick their luscious lips seductively a lot.
Yeah.
I know I'm a woman and not a man, but I've really never seen a woman lick her lips.
Well, you never were watching.
Perhaps. As I say, you know,
that's a little game they play. You know,
have you seen that a lot? Because you know, I remember.
Sure, I've seen it many times. The French said they make a moue, M-O-U-E. You know,
Well, I read that you were actually with the police on the bust of a narcotics ring.
Oh, I was on several of those big ones. Yeah.
But that you took two bullets on one of them.
Well, I got one. Uh-huh. That was enough. Well, it was one shot, but it was a buckshot in the darn thing. Whenever you go out playing around, you're going to get hurt. So the best thing to do, don't go where trouble happens. Otherwise, you're going to be part of it, and then you can get clobbered. I'm not about looking for any of these things anymore. I'll use everything that's in my mind. I will use my imagination. I'll get into fiction and keep it that way. I don't want any more realism. That gets to be rough.
Well, this is a kind of weird question, but when you actually were shot, I don't know if this is too weird or not, but how did it compare with how you imagined it was when you had characters being shot in your books?
Well, it was a little bit screwy because I was standing behind a whole bunch of tomato paste. There was a slogan for this tomato paste. Who put those six big tomatoes in the itty-bitty cans? And the bullet went through the cans, got everybody splashed with tomato paste, and everybody thought they had all been shot as well.
Oh, gee.
So the shot just sprayed around, and it was...
How bizarre. Since you had tomato sauce all over, did you know, were you able to figure out right away where the actual wound was?
Yeah, you'll know right where that is,
right,
but
okay.
You're not considering that right away. All you know is everybody got clobbered, and that was, you know, there you. It was kind of hard to get the tomato sauce off, though. It wasn't deadly, I'll tell you that.
So, is the sensation something that you've recalled for writing?
No. You're better off if you use your imagination. You know, writing is something completely different. When you're writing fiction, it's easy. You can do things with fiction that nobody ever believed in. Words are great. They're expressive. You can say things that you'd never experience and make them sound real. Hey, that's what being a writer is all about. I have as much fun writing as I do have reading.
You've said that the first part of a story that comes to you is the ending, because that's where you have
sure.
to get to, and that's in your novels the most, the kind of, you know, the dramatic climax. Seems to me your titles come from the last page, too.
Not always. No. When you're writing, see, it's like a joke. The only part of a joke you listen to is that punchline. So when you develop a story, that's your important part. It's the big ending on there. Now, O. Henry did this in all of his stuff, and he was an old-time writer. I've just gone ahead and elaborated on his style a little bit in the structure of a story. Titles come out of the air. I don't know where they come from, but when I was doing The Killing Man, we couldn't get a title for that. And we were writing down all sorts of titles. We put them on the computers looking for any duplications and whatnot. And I just sit there, all of a sudden I looked at it, I said, The Killing Man, that's it. And just popped into my head.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't try for a title until after the book is finished.
Something I recently learned about you is that you are, or were, I'm not sure which, a Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, I've been a Jehovah's Witness since 1951.
You know, what surprised me about that was that I know you're not your character, but, I mean, Hammer is such the man alone that it seemed, like, hard for me to fathom that you were, you know, part of an organized religion.
Well, like, I'm not going to discuss it with you now, but next time one of Jehovah's Witnesses is knocking on the door, call them in. They'll tell you all about it. But religion's a strange thing, you know. It's something you have personally in your lives, and you got to believe in it, and I believe in what I believe in.
Can I ask if the witnesses have ever objected to your books?
No. I don't think they read them, and I don't blame them. But now, what you're writing is just this is a job with me. I don't write for any express purpose like passing messages around. It's strictly a job. I try to keep them fairly contemporary and fairly clean. The first time I used a four-letter word in a book, I thought the publisher was going to go out of their minds, and this was a long time after it was coming out in other books. I don't try to use bad language, mainly because these are, again, our exclamation points within the story. And I try to keep things as normal as possible. Anybody wants to read violence and sex, go to the newspaper. There's plenty of it there.
Something else I recently learned about you is that you collect blue willow pottery.
Yeah.
Which is a surprising hobby for a hard-boiled guy.
Well, it's not a one-time blue willow was just cheap kitchenware for all the farm ladies all over the country. It was made by different companies, but there was a classic thing about it. It was all excellently made. It was great chinaware. Cheap, very cheap. But now it's up on the stage where, you know, it becomes antique and looks nice. And I lost a whole mess of it down in the hurricane.
Yeah.
And my wife collects pewterware, and she lost her pewterware. But we'll get it back. There's a lot of it out there, and the fun is going out collecting these things and doing it again. And I like it. It's useful. It's pretty looking, and reminds me of my childhood, because we had it at home.
Well, speaking of your childhood, your father was a bartender?
Yeah, he was a good Irish bartender in Brooklyn.
So did you hang out at that bar?
No, I never hang out. I would never hang out at a bar, because I don't like the atmosphere of a bar. It's nobody goes into a bar to get sober. And again, it's a trouble spot. Bar scenes where you have restaurants, well, this is a different situation. But when you speak of a bar, you know what you're speaking of is like a neighborhood pub type of bar where everybody's in there and they finally, it's a place where they go and they don't want to go home. But I don't hang around in those places. Mm-hmm. I never did.
Mickey Spillane, thanks a lot for talking with us.
I'm glad to be here.
Terry Gross speaking with detective writer Mickey Spillane in 1989. He died Monday at the age of 88.